Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCPN 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
And now joining us is Mark O'Mara. How are you doing today, Mark?
Doing very well. Great to talk to you.
So Mark, now there's been a lot more focus and interest on the stand your ground law, and just that with that recent case. Can you explain exactly what it means with stand your ground? Because I hear so many different stories from people.
Yeah, and it takes a little bit of history. So I'm going to start with a bit of history, which is, it started with the Castle Doctrine, which is basically something that says if you're in your own home, you can protect yourself. Before that, you know, the king could do whatever he wanted, including coming into your home. So they came up with this Castle Doctrine that says you're allowed to protect yourself in your own home as though it's your very own castle. And meaning if I go in the front door of your castle, you don't have to run to the back bedroom before you protect yourself and use deadly force against me. Then it turned into, well, we need to protect, you know, the sanctity of life. So though you're allowed to protect yourself in self-defense, which we have always had, meaning, you know, if you come at me and I have to protect myself, I'm allowed to do it. That type of self-defense sort of throughout the eons was a way that you could protect yourself. But the theory was, one, you can only protect yourself if you really need to, meaning it has to be force that could hurt you, anything from great bodily injury to death. That's the type of force that you can protect yourself with deadly force. So if you come at me with, you know, a branch of a tree, I can't just shoot you with a gun because my response to that attack, that force, isn't reasonable under the circumstances. You can't really hurt me. You can't cause great bodily injury with some little branch off a tree. So the concept is you have to look at self-defense fairly fact-specific. And then the law developed to say, before you use force likely to cause death or great bodily injury, you have to try and get out of it. You have to use whatever means you can to get away, to not use the deadly force. So self-defense had sort of grown in its interpretation with the states, the United States statutes, to say before you use deadly force, you have to use whatever means possible to try to avoid using it. Now, unless you're in your house. If you're in your house, then you still have the right. You don't have to retreat before you use deadly force. But out on the street, the thought is, and the case law was, for traditional self-defense, you may have to retreat before you use deadly force.
Now, this is specific to New York.
A long time.
This was specific. Now, what you're talking about is specific Florida law?
Nope. No, this is generic law throughout the country.
Okay.
The law throughout the country had developed to say, within the context of self-defense, if you're going to use deadly force, you have to use other means to try to avoid it, less than deadly force, or try and extricate yourself from that situation before you use deadly force. We all saw the video. Dredzka, his defense team, sort of said, well, the pushing on the ground was a violent act, and that's called a battery. It might be an aggravated battery under our statute if he caused great bodily injury. That's just the definition. But that was a battery at the very least, a criminal act. So when Dredzka looked up, if let's just say that McLaughlin backed up 15 feet instead of the 3 or 4 that he may have backed up. Well, it would have been more obvious, I think, to most people that Dredzka was not justified in shooting him if he was at this point 15 feet away or even turned and ran away, like in my example. The question really is, realizing that Dredzka was just assaulted, what was his perspective of what was coming next? And I will tell you, and I'm not damning the defense team. They put on their case, and the jury decided that it wasn't justified. But what really has to happen in a case like that is you have to be able to get across to the jury what the defendant, the person who did the shooting, in this case Dredzka, what he was perceiving. And the problem with perceptions in traumatic events, you can use the Zimmerman case as an example, and you can use Dredzka, and there's 100 others, is you have to almost put yourself in the eyes of the person who is perceiving the threat because of what that person is going through. And if I, to defend Dredzka, I would say, well, you got knocked down, there's a shot of adrenaline that goes up your spine, you don't know what's going on. We all know, those who study this tell us, you get tunneled in a time of stress, traumatic event like pushing to the ground, you have tunnel vision, your ears don't work as well, your blood pressure goes up 20-30 points, your heart rate almost doubles because you have this shot of adrenaline up your spine, the back part of your brain takes over, the front part of your brain doesn't, and all you really think about is survival. And if you get that point across to a jury that the perception problems that a person who's just been through a traumatic event, like getting tossed to the ground, may well have better explained away why Dredzka thought it was an appropriate move to shoot. Now, Dredzka had his own problems because Dredzka seems to be a bit of a trigger-happy person because the one fact that got into the jury was the recent event with the truck driver where he threatened that person. And my thought is you have one event, a jury may understand it and give you the benefit of the doubt. Mm-hmm. When there's a second event, much more difficult to convince the jury that you are acting reasonably when you seem to do this a lot.
All right.
Now in the Zimmerman case, did you use the stand your ground law or not?
No. No, we didn't. But people said, oh, this is a stand your ground statute or stand your ground case, and everyone focused on stand your ground and how unreasonable is stand your ground. And look, it allowed for a 17-year-old to get killed, and nobody's responsible for it. There's two things that you have to keep very separated, or three things. The George Zimmerman case was a traditional self-defense case. It was not a stand your ground case. Because stand your ground case, if you really think about it, only applies when you have an ability to retreat, but the statute doesn't require you to retreat. So you have to have that ability to retreat. Because after all, if you have no ability to retreat, stand your ground isn't an applicable standard. So in Zimmerman's case, he had no ability to retreat. The facts were fairly clear that Trayvon Martin was on top of him, bouncing his head off some cement, and that he could not retreat. So in the Zimmerman case, it was purely self-defense, meaning you're in a situation where you are allowed to protect yourself. Now, if George was standing up and Trayvon was hitting him in the face, let's say, and instead of being on top of him, then yes, we may have said, okay, if George shot him under those circumstances, well, George is in Florida. Florida has a standing ground statute. George doesn't have to try and retreat first. So the fact that George didn't retreat first is not relevant because we're in a standing ground state. But it didn't apply to George's case because he was on his back and could not retreat. So it was just inapplicable.
Right.
Other thing that has to be kept in mind is this whole concept that many of the standing ground statutes add to it. So it's not just I can stand my ground and I can shoot without retreating. It is the concept that if you are acting in self-defense, not just standing your ground, and that's the confusion that most people have. You're not just standing your ground. If you are acting in traditional self-defense or stand your ground self-defense, if you are acting in self-defense, then the statute says you are immune from prosecution, and the state has to disprove that acting in self-defense. Until they do, you're immune. It gives you additional immunity, and it gives the defendant in this case, so let's call him the force user or the shooter, it gives them additional protection. And the reason why Drezka did not get arrested that day, according to Gualtieri, who was the sheriff, he said, look, I looked at the statute, I looked at the video, this guy says he was in reasonable fear of great bodily injury at the hands of McLaughlin, that's why he shot. I think that's self-defense. This statute says if I'm wrong and I arrest him, I could be held liable to Drezka for arresting him, so I am not touching him. I'll let the state attorney's office decide what to do. So that's why the sheriff didn't arrest him. And of course, when the state attorney did their investigation, found out about these, I guess there's three other events, one that got into trial, two that did not, then they said, we're not giving you the benefit of the statute. We don't think that your self-defense maneuver was reasonable because of your history, so we're charging you with manslaughter.
So it just depends on if they dig deeper to find out Drezka's history, then that would have been questioned.
Yeah, and that's what changed the whole thing. Look, if Drezka had no prior history, no prior events, I'm not certain the state would have charged him. McLaughlin definitely did back up a couple of feet, but here's the thing. I do this a lot, and I talk to a lot of people in stress circumstances and in shooting circumstances. Your brain does not act reasonably when it is in survival mode. It sees things, things slow down, they speed up, things get larger, threats get massive, they are much closer than you think they are much bigger than they really are when you're perceiving it through a time of hyper stress. And if Drezka didn't have the prior events that sort of convinced the state not to give him the benefit of the doubt, he may not have even been charged.
So the case is probably not done. Does Drezka have a case to fight this again?
They're going to appeal it because there were some rulings that were made and also some arguments that were made by the state that I think were a little bit questionable, so I'm presuming that they're going to appeal it. And then an appellate court will decide whether or not the judge made mistakes, because that's really what an appeal is how well did the trial go and did the judge give the defendant a good trial, or are there questionable rulings that need to be reviewed by the appellate court? So he'll file the appeal, definitely, and who knows, he may get a new trial. I haven't looked at the case through that filter yet.
Okay. So it's not like you can appeal just to redo the case. There has to be a reason for appeal.
Absolutely. No, the case is over and done forevermore unless and until an appellate court says there was enough of a mistake here or enough problems that he deserves a new trial.
Okay.
Or, so, you know, the law was applied improperly, things like that.
Right. So this stand your ground statute, do you think it's a good thing and all states should carry it, or do you think it's something that's not maybe so helpful?
My personal opinion on a stand your ground statute, the problem, here's one concern I have. Nobody knew what the stand your ground statute was until the Zimmerman case.
Right.
Nobody had even heard of it. It was on the books, but nobody really, I mean, I was aware of it, but that's because I do criminal defense work. Most people don't know. The concern that I have with the, what I'll call the Zimmerman interpretation of what stand your ground is and isn't, is that people did get this thought process that, oh, wow, the stand your ground statute's a cowboy statute. You know, come near me or tick me off and I'm just going to shoot you because I can.
Right.
And that's not what it says at all. A true, perfect understanding of self-defense as modified by a stand your ground statute says if you're where you're allowed to be and you're being lawful, and somebody threatens you improperly, you know, you're not causing the problem, somebody threatens you with imminent threat of great bodily injury, and you reasonably perceive that to be happening now, then we're not going to require that you're trying to run behind a tree because that may put you at greater risk. That's what the Stand Your Ground statute says. And I'm also, and so, under that interpretation of it, the idea that you're sort of protecting law-abiding people if they're really being law-abiding and they don't have to put themselves at greater risk, I don't find that too odious. But philosophically, we here in this country have gotten very used to shooting each other.
Yeah.
And I think we need to be a little bit more circumspect about that generally.
Right.
So, because the Zimmerman effect is that people tend to think that they have more protection than the statute actually gives them, it troubles me that people may be more emboldened to shoot somebody when it's other than the absolute, without question, last choice. Yeah,
so
now some of the criticism that Zimmerman got was, okay, maybe you were justified in shooting him, but after all, you know, he probably would have just beat the heck out of you, and come on, you didn't have to kill him when he was just going to beat the heck out of you. And my response to that factually was when I questioned the medical examiner when they were describing Zimmerman's injuries to the back of his head. And I said, okay, well, what was that one? Well, that was seemingly when he bounced him off the back of the head, off the cement. And what about this one? Well, that's about a 2-inch or 2 centimeter from that, looks like it came from cement. And that one there, same thing. I said, okay, what about the next one? And the medical examiner said to me, well, there wasn't the next one. And I said, well, why not? And what do you mean? I said, well, because George Zimmerman didn't know what the next one was going to be, did he? That was when he shot him.
Mm.
And that's the harsh reality, is you don't know, you know, could George Zimmerman have said, You know, time out, Dick Tracy, and thought it through and said, maybe he won't kill me with the next couple of blows. But your brain doesn't work that way in times of stress. Your brain says, protect yourself. And if you're getting your head bounced off of cement, you're not going to hope and presume that it's just going to be a beating and that the next one's not going to crack your skull open. And that's the problem with, you know, how we hold people liable for their, you know, the events of shooting. But I do wish we lived somewhere where we would learn to shoot less. No question about that.
Right. So, and one of the thoughts was that, especially today with social media, the groups, and everyone, you know, tends to go where they, you know, they enjoy, and their news as well. So their news will be cherry-picked, and also can't, in this case, I could see some of the news coming in. It's a little bit bastardized a bit, and we don't have the opportunity to talk to someone like you to kind of get the details to show the difference between, oh, I can carry a gun, threaten somebody, they threaten me, and I can shoot them. There, I can use this. So I can see where it can go kind of the wrong direction.
Oh, fast. People believe, people all of a sudden stand your ground.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Statute post-Zimmerman shooting was the worst statute known to mankind and had to be repealed. Everyone complained to the Florida legislature, who didn't change a thing about it. Because they looked at it and said, you can't use the Zimmerman fact scenario as a basis for saying this is a bad law. Hell, the law didn't even apply to the Zimmerman case.
Yeah.
The immunity question, why wasn't George arrested that night? I don't think it had much to do with the immunity provision of the statute as it did the facts of it. George gave a very, straightforward, I think, an open explanation as to what he did. And they believed him. Okay, well, that's a call that they would have made with or without, I think, the statutory presumption of immunity.
Now, do you think it would have made a difference if what happened after the case was already finished, like with Zimmerman and his wife and some of those charges, if that would have happened before, do you think it would have made a difference?
Well, in the same sense that Drescher didn't get the benefit of the doubt because he had other events of violence or, improper behavior, I think that, what happened to George afterwards, let me back up. George was a pretty straightforward, sort of rigid thinking, but a pretty straightforward kind of guy. We can get into things like, he took a black girl to prom. He mentored two black kids. He, things that would have suggested pretty immediately and unquestionably that he was not racist, and that he wasn't this person like they suggested. You're looking for a black kid to shoot. But let's face it, you put somebody in body armor and hiding for 18 months with half the country loving him, but half the country hating him and hunting him, and things like bounties being on his head, and that's going to change anybody and have some negative effect of anybody, and I think it did. And I think, George got affected by you know, what he had to go through because of the notoriety of this case. And I think some of the fallout of that stress and everything that he was going through, you know, sort of showed up after the trial with some of those events that he had with the wife and the girlfriend and the father-in-law, you know, and things like that. So sure, I think that would have an effect. And had those things preceded the trial or the shooting of Trayvon Martin, would the prosecutor have considered those acts and in determining how to prosecute? Yeah, absolutely. Just like they did with Drechka. You know, the state in Drechka tried to get in all three of those events, I think, or two of the three, and the judge said no to all but one, and then the state had that. So I think that had they had prior acts of violence by George, they did try and get one of them in where he was sort of helping a buddy in a bar who got attacked by an undercover cop that seemingly didn't identify himself as a cop, and they tried real hard to make a lot out of that. So yeah, it definitely would have come in, and it may well have affected how George's statements were perceived.
So it's interesting because I think in 2013 there was an interview on CNN with Chris Cuomo, and he was interviewing a couple, I think a district attorney, and but one, the psychologist, the lady, almost predicted that was probably what was going to happen in the next, in the near future, that so many people were after him, he's going to have that kind of effect.
Yeah. So. Well, you know, he was, again, he was, it was sort of almost celebrity-itis, you know, you put somebody in the spotlight for so long, either you get used to the glare or you get blinded by it, and, you know, it affects you. I hope that it hasn't affected me that much. Other people might think it did. I don't know. But I will tell you that I know other lawyers that, you know, you shove them in the spotlight on a high-profile case, and it's like, hey, excuse me, dude, you're still human. Come on back down. So, yeah, it can really get to you. We see that with, you know, true celebrities or, you know, actors and things like that, or even ball players who are given a $30 million contract and all of a sudden they just get absurdly stupid with their behaviors. Mm. Oh, not saying that was George, but celebrity-itis will have its effect, there's no doubt.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. Did you expect that Zimmerman case to take off like that?
No. I mean, it had hit the locals and it just started to get a little bit of national when I got involved in it. But no, nobody thought it was going to get like that, and you couldn't have anticipated that at all. It caught fire because of this sort of combination or intersection of guns, race, and media. You know, those three sort of came to, and social media. Those all sort of came together in this conflagration of flow of information that went out. That nobody anticipated. The Zimmerman case, I mean, I had people, we were getting emails literally from all across the world, Philippines, China, just everywhere. Everybody was watching that case, it seemed. And it just hit at the right time with all the right elements in just sort of everything we were going through. And yeah, nobody thought that was coming. It was an amazing 18, 20 months worth of existence that, first of all, I loved. It was great to be involved in, but nobody could have anticipated that.
Yeah. What was the fallout like? Like afterwards, was there a lot of negativity towards you afterwards?
Well, you know, it's funny because, you know, I really thought that once the case is tried and put on in an open courtroom and everybody's watching it, and the facts will come out as they did, and the jury deliberated, and they came up with their opinion, and obviously I think it was the correct opinion. I thought it was a very strong self-defense case. But regardless, I thought, okay, this is the way it's supposed to work. I've learned to listen to jury verdicts, whether I win them or lose them. And the whole country's looking, and they will look at it, win it, lose it. They will understand, you know, at least it was a well-tried case. But there was a lot of animosity with the verdict because, you know, I think the black community looked at this as being an opportunity to sort of right the ship a little bit. You know, that finally we have a case where it's getting the national publicity that all shootings of young black guys should be, or should get. This one did, and you know, we will have, you know, our, we will have our day. And then I think the black community felt, you know, that they didn't get it, whether they were cheated out of it or whatever. And so there was a lot of backlash against the verdict that surprised me a little bit. The problem with the Zimmerman case is that it was not the textbook case or the poster child case for how a young black male can get improperly killed by this old white guy, which was the context that was placed on top of it, but the facts just didn't support it. And I will tell you, I have seen 100 other cases, and I've been involved in 100 other cases, where much better a scenario to present to show how biased the criminal justice system can be against African Americans, because they're normally my clients, and I've fought long and hard to show how biased the system is. It's just that the Zimmerman case, the fact scenario did not fit the echoing of it. It just wasn't. This was not a particularly racially motivated, completely improper, unjustified shooting of a young black male just because he was black. That wasn't the fact scenario of the Zimmerman case.
Wow. What got you into law? Like, what got you into being a lawyer?
Whoa. well, I think I was 8 or 9, and an uncle who I really respected came up to me and asked me what I wanted to be, and being a good Irish Catholic, I said I want to be a priest or a lawyer. I ended up going to seminary school for a little while. That didn't work. So when I was about 12 or 13, my dad was president of the Uniform Fire Officers Union in New York. This is back in the day where there was a lot of tussling between the city, John Lindsay, I think, was the mayor, and my dad, who was president of the union, and they were fighting back and forth. And he had a lawyer for the union. His name was Tom Dillon. And I always remember how my dad would rely on him, first of all, and that he really helped my dad out of some of the situations that they were in, and, you know, arguing on behalf of the union. And he was calm, and, of course, he was very smart, intellectual, and I'm 10 or 11 or 12, so just a lawyer himself is, you know, back then, very respected position, not quite as much today as it was back then. But that's where I probably got my first taste of how lawyers help people. Of course, he was helping my dad, so that's automatic.
Yeah.
And that's where I got sort of bit with a bug. Then I went to, well, high school, of course. I went to college and did a lot of law work, and then law school.
So Stand Your Ground in New York State, is there?
No, I don't believe there is.
No. We don't want New Yorkers to stand.
New Yorkers don't even have guns. They're not supposed to have many guns up there. And I grew up in Queens, so, you know, I love New York. But, yeah, they have pretty strict gun laws, and that's a very good idea up there, particularly in a large city like that. That's already been through a lot of its own, you know, growing pains and difficulties.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, gun regulation is good, but, you know, I can get slapped for saying that. Certain markets.
Yeah, we're dealing with it's a whole new world that we're dealing with right now, with all of the recent uproar about gun rights and gun regulation and things like that. It's going to be very tough to figure out a balance between all of that.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Do you like TV trials? Do you like the being like a court TV idea, and that everyone can watch it, you know, from O.J. Simpson up to now?
You know, I like it. I mean, obviously, it's what I do, so I love watching live TV. I don't do it a lot, but I'd rather watch a live trial than a make-believe program, because the make-believe programs, you know, it's dramatized and they never really get it right. I do, you know, strangely, because of Zimmerman, it started with O.J., but because of Casey Anthony, Zimmerman, and now a dozen of others, people have really gotten an appetite for watching live courtroom TV. And look, if they like it and it's interesting and they get to know the process and they get to learn the process, then what we're really doing is teaching them in practice, or, you know, three dimension, what the law is. And I think that's educational and beneficial for people to know, you know, what happens with the Jodi Arias case and how they're going to prove up that you killed your boyfriend and lied about it, or, you know, the Zimmerman case, or, you know, the Amato case that Court TV covered a couple of weeks ago in Seminole County where he killed his family. You know, it's a little bit grotesque sometimes to have a Court TV or a TV show about somebody who killed their family, but it's not TV. It really happened. Mm-hmm. And now we're just getting it out to people so that they understand, one, maybe what we're doing to each other, and then, two, how the system handles it. So I will tell you one nice thing about what Court TV does is it shows dynamically how prosecutors prosecute and how defense attorneys have to protect their clients' constitutional rights and do it zealously while the state's trying to prove up their case. And I think getting that out is sort of like a, you know, a live civic lesson to people who need to know a lot more about how to protect their rights and how their rights can be assailed by prosecutors or maybe even cops who aren't, you know, always acting above board.
Along the same lines, what is helpful to me is your other job as a legal analyst for, let's say, that right there helps me when I'm watching when they start asking those questions, so that's good.
Yeah, and quite honestly, yeah, I think that helps because we do know this stuff, just like this conversation we've had here today. Most people went through the whole entirety of the Zimmerman trial watching it for 3 or 4 weeks and still didn't quite understand what standing around was and wasn't. But I think lawyers who are not just there to hear themselves speak but actually try and educate the audience can get across some of these nuances. Part of it's just boring, but, you know, laws are boring.
Well, fake news is so fun, though.
it can be fun. I love it. But, you know, trying to get it across to lay people in a way that they understand, I love that challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, because I still know people today that think stand your ground means I could pull up my gun and shoot you if you're swearing at me on the road.
Yeah, they actually think that, they say you piss me off, I will just shoot you.
Yeah.
That is not what stand your ground is there for.
I didn't think so. You know, the only thing that concerns me, too, about TV trials, but I think that a lot of times, how do you do your job being watched? Like, I look at what it started like with Marcia Clark and all that. All of a sudden, there's every tabloid and picture, and here's her with topless on the beach and all that. That's got to affect the way you do your job. That's sort of where I have a drawback.
And I think you're right. You know, I think that's a necessary evil. I mean, look at social media. Look at the Internet. I mean, the Internet is a phenomenal tool. It has an extraordinary amount of danger on it. Children who are 10 or 12 years old with 3 keystrokes can find the most vile information known to mankind, literally, in 2 or 3 keystrokes. So, you know, you can look at the Internet and say, yeah, it has its downside, because people will be assailed by it. Same thing with social media. It's a great tool for things like the Arab Spring, but it also is used for bullying, and people kill themselves. Children will kill themselves because they get bullied on social media. Another downside to it, Court TV, and I'll tell you, I've watched a couple of Court TV cases where those lawyers are playing to the camera, you know, with the drama. And that's not, no. You don't have the right. You know, you're in there as a lawyer representing one person and one person only, and that's your client. And if you're playing to the TV because you want to get, you know, some TV program, you know, you're not a lawyer, you're a whore. So you got to be careful about that. And I hope, I mean, there may be some people out there that say I did. I mean, look what I did with Zimmerman. We had our own Facebook page, our own Twitter account. How dare us do that. except we absolutely had to. I was dealing with the Florida Bar on that a lot to try and make sure I wasn't screwing up. But we had to, just to dip our finger in the torrent of information that was flowing past us on that case so we can figure out what in God's name is going on, because those are our potential jurors.
Yeah.
But you know, people may have said that I was being sort of all egoist with the way I was handling it, but
no. Well, I mean, I'm sure there's going to be people that say it, but I didn't get that perception
of it.
Because certain people do play And you can, and I think they stick out, right? And you're kind of like, wow, that's a performance.
Yeah, and my fear is that we now, you know, it has become a bit more acceptable, and all of a sudden, 5 or 10 years from now, you know, TV lawyers, you know, lawyers that get on court TV are going to have their own agents and makeup, you know, hairdressers and crap like that.
Yeah, that new norm doesn't sound good.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't.
Yeah, I would too if I had hair, but.
My hair.
Well, so Mark, this has been great. Do you have a website or any place that you'd like to promote?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I appreciate that. It's sort of a brand new redone website. It's www.omaralawgroup, that's omaralawgroup.com. Leave a note. If you have a question, we'll try and answer it. You can call the office at 407-898-5151. I'm here all the time. I work like a dog. But, you know, I'd be glad to help out. It's sort of what we do, and I love doing it.
Fantastic. Well, we'll have that posted on our website as well. Mark O'Mara, thank you very much for being here.
Sure thing. Great to talk to you. Be well.
Thank you.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.